Welcome back, everyone, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judy Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. We've spent a lot of time on previous episodes with me interviewing people. Today, I just wanted to speak to you one-on-one. The title of today's podcast is Honesty is the Elephant in the Room. Many of you may know from listening to previous podcasts that I used to work with the Clyde Beatty Cole Brothers Circus, yay, as a marketing director and dancing bear in my earlier career. For that reason, using circus metaphors comes naturally. And the title of this episode is absolutely true. Honesty is the elephant in the room in a divorce. And by that I mean that honesty is the hardest part of a divorce. Honesty about our part in the divorce is ridiculously hard to face. Honesty about our part in anything is hard, but facing our reality in a divorce is the hardest of all because divorce is life-changing. It affects us familially, culturally, religiously, in our friendships, and most importantly, with our children. Add to that the natural inclination to deny our part in the divorce. If you're in a no-fault divorce state like California, which is where I work, there's no opportunity on any of the forms to list the reasons for divorce except for domestic violence and in an annulment. You may not know this, but in an annulment, fraud has to be proven in order to invalidate the marriage between two consenting adults. So, in a no-fault divorce state like California, and there are many others out there, there is really no reason to be honest about our part in the dissolution in the marriage in order to file. And while that's a good thing in my opinion, because having to prove the reason for divorce is beyond destructive to the entire family, not having to deal with the reason personally is preventative to growing, healing, and choosing a better relationship with a greater understanding of how to be a better spouse in the future with somebody else, or simply how to choose a different spouse. But now, it's a little different in a litigious divorce where attorneys have to be hired. The lawyers will definitely hear what their clients say about the reasons for the divorce, and typically, it will be all about the grievances of the other spouse. It'll never be about us. So if you're talking to a lawyer, I guarantee you, you're going to say everything your spouse has done wrong to set your case up properly with the attorney, but you're never going to say, except for the fact that I did this and I did that, and this is why he or she did what they did. Typically, that doesn't happen. And if you get with the wrong divorce attorney, they will feed off of the one-sidedness of the story that you're telling, and that will be the worst thing you could ever go through. Not only will that be dishonest, and you're really setting your attorney up improperly, but you're choosing an attorney that will make money off of your lack of ability to be honest with yourself and honest about the reasons for the marriage. And you may be in a divorce, you may be in a state that requires you to list the reasons why you're getting divorced. And if you're not honest, you're going to spend so much money and so much emotion unnecessarily because you don't want to face the reality of your own behavior. Rest assured that the client's spouse won't say it's all my fault and won't give up what they have to give up as their portion in the problems that were caused in the marriage. So, again, honesty is the elephant in the room. Now, when I file for people as a legal document assistant, I file for people who choose what we call as the amicable divorce route. In that case, I never initiate discussion about anything personal that affected the marriage and caused the divorce. It doesn't mean my clients don't say it at a certain point, but I don't initiate it. It's just business, so to speak, going forward. Divorce is a series of decisions to divide assets and debts, to establish spousal and or child support, and to decide on co-parenting plans. But I'm also a mediator. In mediation, when a couple needs a neutral third party to help them with all of these decisions, the reason for the divorce becomes the backdrop to the negotiations. Without a doubt, the hurt, the justice seeking, the anger, and the blaming of the other spouse, this all creates the backdrop for what people request in mediation. And eventually the reasons for the divorce are blurted out in frustration and anger. You cheater. You go with whores. You are horrible. You drink. You take drugs. You have anger management. You smoke pot in the car while you're driving the kids. I mean, you're gay. Seriously, you're gay. It all comes out eventually in mediation. Because this is the part where you get to be you. You get to ask for whatever you want. I get to be the mediator and at least guide you through the logistics of what you're saying and make you think about how your requests are going to be able to be granted. But the reasons for the divorce, the way you see the reasons for the divorce, and everything is one-sided, and then are blurted out in mediation, and then the other side will come back with what that other person has done wrong. So dealing with our part in the divorce, if it is a normal marriage in which both spouses have some level of culpability and responsibility, dealing with honesty is the most freeing thing you could ever feel. Because honesty does set you free. It's a cliche, honesty sets you free, but it's really true. Because if we're not honest, we're stuffing the real reasons. And when we're stuffing the real reasons, it causes stress. It causes us to behave in ways that we're going to apologize for. We become aggressive. We act out. We may lie in order to cover up what's really going on. And why do people do this? Because it's really hard to face ourselves. It's really hard to look in the mirror of self-reflection and say, okay, this is my part. This is what I did that caused the downfall to the marriage. It is so hard. And it's so hard because sometimes we don't really even see it at the beginning. Or we don't see it enough. When we're honest about our level of responsibility, we can stop lying. And we can stop lying that it's solely our partner's fault that we're getting divorced. And we can stop lying about we never did anything to cause anything. Maybe you're the unusual person that didn't. Maybe you did everything right and your partner had a mental health challenge, was a sociopath, never told you there was another family in Utah or in some other country in the world. That happens once in a while. But if you're the normal garden variety of divorce, where you thought it was going to work and then both people contributed to the downfall of the marriage, say it. Take your part in the responsibility. It is the healthiest thing you can possibly do for yourself. You know, maybe there were no warning signs that the relationship was in trouble. This is an interesting thing. He just left with no warning. Everything was fine. He said that he wanted to go out for a pack of cigarettes, even though he doesn't smoke, and he never came back. I didn't see it coming. You know, I really did get a call like this. Actually, I've gotten a few calls like this, but I got a call like this recently. And then the more I talked with this person over the phone, yes, it came out. No, the marriage was in trouble for quite a while. Things weren't going well. The filing for the divorce maybe wasn't discussed ahead of time. And so that was shocking that paperwork was handed to her. But it wasn't shocking that the marriage wasn't going well. when there are arguments in the home consistently and you can't really come together on anything, you're having problems in the marriage. When we deny our level of responsibility, denial becomes this thick cloud that prevents healing, prevents learning, and disables divorce from becoming a new beginning. And if we have this important life event called divorce that cannot serve as a giant learning lesson for self-improvement, then divorce remains destructive, non-productive, and toxic. We can't move on, and we can't become happy again. The lack of accountability is the thing that destroys us, not the divorce. It's the lack of accountability in our part in the marriage that led to the divorce. That becomes the problem. And maybe it's just as simple as we made the wrong decision. We really should have never gotten married. Okay, so just let it be that. You don't have to then do an accounting of everything wrong each of you did. Just make it, we really should have never gotten married. We tried to make a bad decision work. I had a client like this, and I think I use this as an example. And we're going into storytelling now, so I want to start with this. Because storytelling really reinforces the learning lesson. So I had a couple years ago who really tried to do the right thing. They were dating, they became pregnant, and they did the honorable thing. They got married, but it really didn't work out. If they hadn't gotten pregnant, more than likely, they would have never gotten married. They just had fun dating, but it should have never led into the marriage. So therefore, in a short-term marriage, it was really a lot of mediation because they hadn't gotten to the point of simply saying we should have never gotten married. And so what I did at one point in the mediation, when I actually got what was going on, I stopped and I said, look, I think you two should really compliment each other. Instead of arguing about everything, you both love your daughter dearly and you both want to spend a lot of time with her. So therefore, your daughter is a really lucky person. But stop beating each other up. You should have never gotten married because you're not compatible. You tried. You tried doing the honorable thing. Congratulate each other that you tried doing the honorable thing and accept that. Because if you can work from that point forward, that you did the honorable thing, everything else should kind of melt away. Okay, so as brilliant as that may sound, by the way, they're still arguing. They're definitely divorced, but they're still arguing. Because they're still mad at each other, that each other isn't the right person the way that person is supposed to be for them, and it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. They should have never gotten married. Not because they're not good people. They're actually both really exceptionally nice people. I like both of them equally. They're both good human beings. They're just not right for each other. Now they have to co-parent, the most difficult situation of all. The co-parenting is killing them. I really hope that someday, I hope someday I have another opportunity to say, look, you have to compliment each other compliment yourselves and appreciate each other that you simply wanted to do the right thing and give each other a break. You're different people. You're going to co-parent differently. Let it be what it is because you, at the end of the day, your daughter knows you both love her ultimately. And that's what you're going to do. That's going to be the best thing of all is create a human being that was loved ultimately. Okay, now we have to go to another one of my really fun stories. And it's a story you can actually follow on television yourself. Now, because I have no life when I go home, well, I have a couple hours to have a life, and that's not long enough, I watch TV. I am a TV junkie. And I watch all of those, most, not all. I watch most of those Housewives series, The Real Housewives of, on Bravo. So in The Real Housewives of Orange County, there are two people, Shannon and David Bedore. And I thought their marriage and divorce was an exceptional example to talk about. So here's what we saw on TV. And I know TV edits and kind of changes the storyline, and we don't get all the information, but I'm going to comment on what I saw on TV. And here's what I saw. Several years ago, Shannon and David Bedore were married, living in the same house, and they had three daughters. David always appeared disconnected emotionally from Shannon, and Shannon was always criticizing David. David is a contractor. He builds fabulous multi-million dollar homes, and they lived in a beyond belief fabulous multi-million dollar home. So David would come home from a hard day of contracting. Shannon was a stay-at-home mom and appeared to be a fabulous mother, taking care of the girls. She would be cooking dinner in her fabulous chef's kitchen where they had 8,000 stoves. So I had to say that because the house looked incredible. And David liked having hors d'oeuvres when he came home. Shannon didn't like hors d'oeuvres, and that was the first point of criticism every single day. Or every single day we saw that on TV, David would come home, he would want chips and salsa. And that would annoy Shannon ultimately. And so that would start the bickering and the arguing. And then David would go to bed early, Shannon would stay up, no connection. So when we went through a couple seasons of A Bad Marriage, and then David's having an affair, the divorce is now imminent, the divorce is now in progress. There wasn't one scene where Shannon ever took responsibility for anything that she did. It was always about David. David wasn't a good husband. David was emotionally disconnected. David went to bed early. David this, David that. It was never, ever something that Shannon did. Did Shannon get too immersed in being a mom? Did Shannon, you know, that she couldn't see David and spend time with him? I don't know. I'm asking this question because we didn't see that. Did Shannon want to make love with David? Did Shannon dress up and be sexy? Did Shannon accept David and his little foibles? Shannon wanted to be accepted. Shannon had a lot of good intentions, by the way. I think Shannon is a marvelous person. Shannon had tons of good intentions. She maybe overdid it a little bit. I don't know, for David's tastes. You know, she was always going to psychics and the Eastern doctors for a million different vitamins and procedures, and David's paying thousands and thousands of dollars for this, so that Shannon could live this Eastern lifestyle of holisticness. You know, she got the house feng shuied, burned candles, did all this. Well, there's nothing wrong with that. There really isn't, but, you know, maybe this annoyed David. Maybe this was so much money he couldn't handle it. I really don't know. But in order to be married to somebody like Shannon, who is so over meticulous about living this alternative lifestyle that, albeit healthy, really is all consuming with rules, could that have been something that caused David to leave? So what I would love to have heard Shannon say at any point in time is, you know, David did his stuff. He had other women, or maybe one other woman. I don't know. David had his stuff, but so did I. And we equally contributed to the breakup of our marriage. If Shannon had ever said anything like that, that would actually free Shannon to pick the next mate in a way that she doesn't pick at him. Because until she changes this behavior of control, and control in the most minute details of how somebody breathes and eats and lives, it's going to happen over and over again. And that's what I never heard from Shannon. Okay, so let's go to another Bravo Real Housewives series. That's the only other one I'm going to do. The Real Housewives of New Jersey. Now, you may have heard on the news that Teresa and Joe Giudice, original cast members a million years ago on this show, were the most volatile couple of all of the couples on the show. Joe was constantly with other women. Teresa knew about it. Teresa had an enormous spending issue. And both Teresa and Joe went to jail. This was horrible. This was national news. This is why I'm thinking maybe some of you have known about this. But it's wire fraud, mail fraud, cheating the government, IRS issues, tax issues. Horrible, horrible, horrible. They have four daughters. Adorable daughters. Teresa goes to jail first for what, a year and a half, something like that. And then Joe goes to jail for like 3.5 years. Because he did the worst. Now we're finding out in this season that Joe never wanted to marry Teresa. And there was a prenup. And this is probably why Joe had other women. He never wanted to marry her. And then they had four children. Even though Teresa knew Joe didn't want to marry her. So why did Teresa marry Joe? Why did she do that? And why did she have four children? I mean, the kids are fabulous kids. Teresa's a fabulous mom. The kids love their dad so much. And so this is really all good, but dad's getting deported to Italy. Well, he did get deported to Italy already. And so now they have this broken home. Teresa picks at Joe. They have the most ridiculous fights on the phone, and they're aired on the show. Fights they don't need to have. He hurts her, she hurts him, and the kids listen to this. And neither of them get that the kids are listening to this. And even though they're both loving parents to their children, and Teresa's just kicking it on providing a lifestyle for the children, she really is. But you're destroying your children in the process because you've never admitted your part in the destruction of the marriage. That's all you have to do is admit your part, which allows you to stop blaming the other person. Blaming the other person means nothing. It's completely destructive. Admitting your part, your culpability, is where it's at, and everything quiets down after that. Let me talk about me for a second. I've referenced my own divorce. It was the saddest year of my life. I was the one that was asked for the divorce. I didn't argue it. I didn't blame him. But it was the saddest year of my life. So here's the reason why my marriage was over. I was not able to be the wife Clark Weigel needed. And Clark wasn't able to be the husband I needed. My issue was I didn't want to have children. I thought I did. And then I didn't after we were married. He really wanted a family, and he should have a family. So although I regret hurting him by agreeing to have children before we got married, I don't regret marrying him. And here's why. I knew there was a problem the very first night of the honeymoon and throughout the honeymoon, which actually ended up being really fun, although it started off in a very disconnected and weird way. So here's my philosophy about the honeymoon in general. I think people know whether they have married the right person the second the vows are taken, that night, the honeymoon night. I think, it's my personal viewpoint, I think that if it's the right marriage, that night will be the best night you've ever had. And from that point forward, you'll say, I just can't believe life can be this wonderful. If it's not the right marriage, I think you know immediately, because once you've made that legal commitment and that religious commitment, all of a sudden you're kind of in marriage jail. And you know that you've made the wrong decision immediately. Well, okay, so I didn't. It felt weird. I felt disconnected. I didn't know what was going on. And then the honeymoon actually did end up being really great. We went to St. John Island in the Virgin Islands for 3 weeks. I mean, who goes on a honeymoon for 3 weeks? So we went for 3 weeks. We had the most incredible foot massages from this masseuse who I think was spiritually divine and gifted. Like, she gave us 15 minutes of a free foot massage. She was promoting her services at the place where we were staying. And after 15 minutes on each foot, I got up and I could not feel the ground I was walking on. Amazingly incredible. And I can't find her. I have made a search of her. I can't find her. I would pay any amount of money to have her back. Then there were these music workshops with a man named Paul Winter, one of Clark's favorite musicians. He just happened to be on the island and at that resort and was giving workshops. And we brought our musical instruments. We were both musicians. I play flute. I'm a classically trained flutist. He plays euphonium, classically trained. And so we brought them with us because we started our relationship playing music together on the circus. I met Clark Weigel on the Clyde Beatty Cole Brothers Circus, in front of the hot dog stand on the Midway. Oh my God, a story unto itself, on the first day that I joined the circus. And we brought our musical instruments on our honeymoon for that reason. We also swam with sea turtles when we went snorkeling. And we walked home at midnight from a music bar with no lights to guide us, yet we found our way home. And that was so spiritual to me. I'll never forget that. I can still conjure that vision to this day. But I didn't understand that feeling of disconnectedness from the start, so I thought we could work out our issues during the marriage. We learned a lot about each other and about ourselves, and I ultimately learned that I really didn't want children. And I will never, ever say that to another person. Well, it's too late now. I can't have children, but too old. But when I was young enough, and if I had remarried, I really made the commitment. I would have to say that up front because that would be a really big issue in the marriage. And we also made love differently. And sex is such a very important part of a marriage and is one of the biggest reasons why people can't stay married. They lose that intimacy as part of the marriage communication. And when that's gone, it's over. When I was asked for a divorce, I was told that there was an affair, but I didn't focus on that affair. That was a symptom. That wasn't the issue to me. I focused on me immediately. That was just my natural instinct. I had to deal with the shock of being asked for the divorce first. I almost passed out. It was in a restaurant in downtown Chicago, and I had to run to the restroom and put cold compresses on my head. I literally was going to pass out. Those words, "I want a divorce," affected me more than you know. And I think that's why I can conjure up empathy for anybody walking in this office that's still hurt, because you can go right back. I can go back to that day. Anybody can go back to a day that you experienced the biggest hurt of your entire life. So I had to deal with the shock first and get myself like mentally situated to function, go back and work and function. Then I had to deal with the hurt. Then I had to deal with the healing. I think instinctively, I knew that not blaming Clark was the best healing. I just knew that. So I chose walking as my therapy. Every night after work, I just walked. I was like Forrest Gump. Remember, Forrest Gump just walked and walked and walked. And there was that montage of all these different scenes of him walking. So I became my own little Forrest Gump. I just walked until one day I got up and, okay, I was good. I was done, just like Forrest Gump. Okay, I can get back to real life again and have some fun. And I think because neither of us blamed each other, I don't think he blamed me. I think he got over that, got into a new relationship, raised a family, had a wonderful life. I think to this day, that's why we're friends, because there was no blaming. Now, we don't talk every day and comb each other's hair, you know, but every now and then we touch base and, you know, how are you doing? Are your parents still living? This is what I'm doing now. And I love that. I love that we didn't blame each other And I love that we can still touch base, because just because the marriage didn't work out doesn't mean we're not great people. So for you, I want to do a little bit of a recap. And the recap is this. Don't blame the other spouse. Don't even blame yourself. Just look at yourself when you face yourself. Just look at yourself and say, okay, we're all imperfect people. I'm imperfect too. What did I do that I can change so that I can move on and maybe choose another relationship that's better suited for me and be a different person in that relationship? So don't blame. Face yourself. Heal yourself in really constructive ways. Choose something, therapy, exercise, one of these self-help groups that you can be in. But heal yourself and then know yourself and make different decisions for yourself going forward. And lastly, use the divorce to grow. Because that's what it is. It's a huge life experience that is there to help us grow. And if you can look at all experiences like that, you will always grow. Honesty will always be your best friend, and there will no longer be an elephant in the room to deal with. I hope this has been beneficial to you. I look forward to our next episode. If you would like to subscribe, please do. I'd love for you to subscribe to this podcast, Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. And if you would like to get in touch with me, I welcome any comments that you have. You can reach me at Judy, J-U-D-Y, at constructiveuncoupling.com, Judy at constructiveuncoupling.com. Or please look me up on my website, Divorce Resource Inc., divorceresourceinc.com. And if you would like to work with me professionally, I would love to. But thank you so much for listening, and I will talk to you next week.